So, how are you feeling? Oh, stop it. I'm Scott Ott with Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, and this episode of Right Angle is brought to you by the members at BillWhittle.com. And gentlemen, there was a headline in the Wall Street Journal that caught my eye that said, "Stop constantly asking your kids how they feel." And I thought, this is interesting. Now, apparently, this is a growing phenomenon among parents especially, with parents asking kids questions like, "Hey, Johnny, are you enjoying your ice cream? Are you excited about school? Did you have fun at the park?" And there's an author of a new book. Her name is Abigail Schreier. Her book is called Bad Therapy, Why Kids Aren't Growing Up. And basically, she says, asking kids about their feelings is almost always a negative thing to do, and you should just leave them alone. Stop prying into their emotional life. Stephen Green, one of the reasons, and I know you're a dad, so you've probably seen this phenomenon, she says is, if you want kids to be happy, the last thing you should do is to communicate that happiness is the goal. That's just not how it works.
Who needs that kind of pressure?
Yeah. And she said, basically, she said the message you should be sending to your kids is emotions are malleable, feelings are unreliable, and diagnosing what's right or wrong with your life based on your feelings is a terrible way of going about it. If we're always asking about how your kids are feeling, Steve, we're basically giving kids the impression that this imperfect signal is a valid way to gauge how you should act or how life is going. Do you think that this psychiatrist author is an insensitive B word, or do you think that there's something to be said for stepping away from the feels of your children?
Well, I think if she is an insensitive B word, we need maybe some more of that in our parenting. Scott, honestly, I wasn't aware that this was really a thing. This, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? Are you happy or not? I mean, I'm not totally callous. This does come up, as you guys know, from a couple of months ago. My niece was murdered down in Austin back on January 1st, and she was 19 years old. My boys are 18 and almost 14, and she was basically, during the years that she lived here, up until she was 15, 16 years old, she was basically their big sister. She spent her summer vacations here in our house. So there have been a lot of feelings here in the last couple of months. And when one of the kids is obviously troubled, which actually just happened with our older son just a few days ago, we do talk to him about it. And it's not easy for me to talk about here, but not in a sense of, stop crying, you sissy, or anything like that. But in the sense of, we've all got to grieve. We all have to grieve in our own ways and on our own timeline. I went from being on the verge of tears all the time to being on the verge of tears some of the time. And now I'm only on the verge of tears when a memory comes at me kind of sideways when I'm not expecting it. And I've had these discussions with my kids. This is what it's done to me. And I've seen it in you guys as well. But the feelings isn't the focus. The focus is the process, that these are steps that we all have to go through. This idea of day-to-day, how do you feel about school today? How do you feel about this teacher? That has never been a thing. That's not a way that either Melissa, my wife, or I talk to our kids. The idea that this is apparently a normal growing thing is, I was about to say it was mystifying to me, Scott, but based on everything else I've seen, I guess I should have expected it, and I'm very glad that it hasn't taken root here in our house.
Bill Whittle, there's one psychiatrist that's quoted in this Wall Street Journal story that maybe is a little darker than he needs to be, but he says basically, don't ask anyone, how are you feeling? Nobody feels great. Never, ever, ever. this is what the guy says. And I think his point is that people are involved in their lives. They're doing something. And he said he emphasized this point by saying to the reporter in the middle of the interview, "So how are you feeling?" And the reporter said, I just said, good. You know, so it's not useful, and it's likely to bring up negative emotions. And then Abigail Schreier makes the distinction between two kinds of people: people who are generally action-oriented and people who are generally state-oriented. The state-oriented people are the people who are constantly thinking about how they're feeling. They're dwelling on what their mood is, what their condition is, sort of mentally and emotionally. The action-oriented people are undistracted by such thoughts and emotions, and they're focused on doing something, getting the next task done, taking action of some sort. Bill, she says that the state-oriented mindset essentially prevents success because, you know, people who are focused on how they're feeling moment by moment are less likely to accomplish anything. You know, you have been pretty open about emotional and mental health challenges in your own situation. Does this have the ring of truth to it, or do you think this is another charlatan trying to sell books?
Well, first of all, she's absolutely right. The best way to stay depressed is to be constantly thinking about how depressed you are. But I'll go further than that. She's saying don't ask your kids how they're feeling. I think she's halfway there. I think don't ask your kids how they're feeling. As a matter of fact, your job is to tell them how they're feeling. I'm not kidding about this. No, I'm not joking. I'm serious as I can be. If I see an 8-year-old boy eating an ice cream cone and he's sad, I'm thinking, you shouldn't be sad eating an ice cream cone. This is an ice cream cone. It's a strawberry ice cream cone. It's a summer day. You're supposed to be feeling happy now, so feel happy. And it's a funny thing, you know, because you are either a slave to your emotions or you are master of them, and those are the two choices you have. You are capable as a human being of making a decision about how you're going to feel about things. And that's a skill that I've learned how to do, and I don't always do it as much as I would like to, but I certainly do it more than I used to, or more than these people do. You know, you can look at life a couple ways, Scott. If you mentioned the difference between people action-oriented and state-oriented, strikes me that state-oriented people see themselves as on board of like a log that's floating down a river. And the log is going to go where the log is going to go, and I'm just going to hang on to the log for dear life. And if it goes someplace bad, then bad things will happen to me. And if it happens to go someplace good, then I guess good things will happen to me. But the other way to look at it is you're in a motorboat, and you decide where you're going to go. You can decide whether you're going to go this way or that way. You have control over your own destiny. One of my favorite expressions ever is you make your own luck. I personally believe that's true. What that means is you can't control random factors operating. It's what luck is. But you can certainly prepare for them and be ready for them when they occur and put yourself into a situation where the probabilities of those kind of things are higher. And I'll just close this by going to the pop culture on this. I'll just do a quick full screen here so people can see this little tableau behind me here. I put these two cutouts here because this is the high point of Western civilization, in my opinion, this episode called Arena. And for those of you not familiar with the old TV show, you've got Captain James T. Kirk of the Starship Enterprise fighting against this Gorn captain who's three times his strength and is essentially covered with armor, body, thick, super thick skin. He can't penetrate. So this guy over here has built a simple dagger because a dagger will go right through James T. Kirk, but Kirk can't use a dagger on this guy, so he's building a cannon. He's had to figure out how to get sulfur, saltpeter, charcoal, make gunpowder, find some crystals, wrap something around the barrel. Why am I going to all this trouble to say all this? Because this is the perfect example of using your head over your heart, right? This is a perfect example of having your mind take over, overcome the fear, and get to work on the problem to solve the problem so that you survive. And this is very different than what happened a mere 10 years after this episode, when all of a sudden we're watching Luke Skywalker going down the Death Star trench, and you hear this voice saying, "Turn off your computer. Use your feelings, Luke. Your feelings. Use your feelings." Well, maybe you shouldn't be using your feelings. Maybe you should be trying to figure out a way to control your feelings so that you can get yourself out of this mess. And this is the problem that we seem to be seeing with so much of these grown children from Gen Z and to some degree millennials. When they're pulled over for a traffic stop, they start screaming and kicking in the backseat of the car. They have to be hobbled, and they're trying to kick the windows out because they're 4 years old. And they're 4 years old because their parents kept asking them how they're feeling and never told them how you should be feeling. And they never said things to them like our parents said to us, like, oh, you're crying? You're crying over this? Well, let me give you something to cry about. And then you realize, no, there are worse things than eating a Sunday, a strawberry ice cream cone on a Sunday summer day, you know? There are worse things than that, which strangely enough ties into my episode topic this week anyway. But yes, get out of the feelings, get more into the control of the feelings. The last thing I'll say on this, one of the pithier things I've always been proud of saying, is it is better to prepare your children than it is to protect them. You will not be around them forever, and it's not good for you to be around them forever. Prepare them. That's the best way to protect them.
And I don't think the author of this book, although I have not yet read it, Abigail Schreier's Bad Therapy, I don't think she's advocating for some sort of harsh stoicism where, you know, you basically tell your kids that every time they express any kind of emotion that they need to suck it up and suppress it. But there is a certain amount of repression of feelings that is necessary to get through the day. You have to have the ability to be hurt, to take the hurt and put it aside and focus on the task in front of you. In order to accomplish anything, in order to get a date and have a nice one, in order to go out to dinner with somebody, you need to be able to suppress your instantaneous emotional reaction to something, or at least to put it in context. And I think that's the biggest problem, is that people allow people who are state-oriented people primarily will allow these feelings to come to the fore and steer the bus. And it's not that you don't have feelings. You just have to be able to say to those feelings, take a seat. We're in control right now. We'll deal with you later. But right now, the bus has to stay on the road. So sit down, be quiet, and buckle your seatbelt. And basically, the author of this book says that with young people, it's better to help them to set goals and take risks, which is described in the article as the cure for the, quote, turbulent gloom of adolescence. If you are awash in your thoughts and feelings from moment to moment, then you tend not to get anything done because you're always using those as an excuse not to get anything done. When Bill was talking, I remembered something that I think came from Angela Duckworth's book, Grit, where she said, we think that we're saying, I'm sad because this thing happened, but we really should recognize that I've discovered a reason to be sad, a way to frame my situation that makes me sad in order to be sad. In essence, she's saying, I want to be sad. I need to find a reason to be so. Oh, here's a perfect one. I'll take that. And the way to put this to the test in your own life, if you're feeling depressed about something or anxious about something or angry about something, is to say, is it possible that I could invent a character, or maybe find one in my own life, who would look at the same set of circumstances and not be sad about it, not be angry about it, but in fact be excited, be joyful, be challenged, be engaged and motivated by the same set of circumstances? And I think if you're honest with yourself, you will admit that there are such people. In fact, you know there are such people because they really piss you off. So those kind of people who don't seem to see the world the way it really is. Now, in reality, those kind of people see the world the way it really is, but they have decided to not let the world defeat them.
And if
we are going to tell our children anything, rather than constantly asking them, how are you enjoying this? How are you excited about that? Did you have fun? You know, are you sad? Instead, being able to lay before them challenges and opportunities that will focus their minds on accomplishment so that they don't get subsumed by the waves of emotion that sweep through us all. For Bill Whittle and Stephen Green, I'm Scott Ott. Thanks to the members at BillWhittle.com for making Right Angle possible.